Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Welcome back. Áine Kerr here, sitting in for Claire. Now, anyone who is a fan of the TV show Veep will recognise this.
Hey, Sue. Did the president call?
No.
Sue. Did the president call?
No.
No. Yeah. Okay. Right. Oh, Sue, did the president call?
No.
An American political comedy series which is set in the office of Selina Meyer, a fictional vice president and subsequent president of the United States. There, in the wake of Vice President Kamala Harris's becoming the front runner for the Democratic presidential nomination, viewership of Veep, the show, is up 353%. So we wanted to take a look at political dramas and how close they are to the real drama in Washington. I'm joined in studio by film critic Brian Lloyd and Irish Times political correspondent Harry McGee. Good morning to both of you. Brian, let's start with Veep, and we're going to go through a series of different shows, but over seven seasons, real life has often followed in the show's footsteps many times, hasn't it? It's almost been prophetic at times.
It is, yeah, especially in the sense of like POTUS dropping out in order for Veep to get a chance at it. But yeah, I mean, what I think was interesting about it was the fact that it was very upfront about not necessarily how kind of useless the vice president's position was, but how the person who occupied that office generally tended to feel quite powerless and quite inept in it. It's very similar to The Thick of It, which was also written by Armando Iannucci, but Julie Louis-Dreyfus as Selina Meyer, like, she really kind of captured, I think, a lot of the kind of the caustic and acerbic humour that's in The Thick of It and translated it into an American audience. But yeah, I mean, there are so many great lines and scenes in it. And I do think it, you know, the fact that you never know whether she's a Republican or a Democrat, the fact that you actually never get to see the president kind of tells you everything you need to know about it, which is, you know, political affiliations and demagoguery have very little to do with it. It's very sort of about the petty politics that are more kind of important than national or international politics.
And Harry, since Kamala Harris became the nominee for the Democratic Party, there's been a lot of clips from Veep going viral, and the creator has had to come out and say any links between Kamala Harris and Selina Meyer are not intentional. But when you look at the clips, it's the awkward turns of phrase. There's a lot of questionable sloganeering and delivery style that you can kind of see why the comparisons are there a little.
Yeah, it shows the kind of the big gap between aspiration and reality, and shows the foibles and weaknesses and pettiness and ego and sensitivities and just plain stupidity of people as it happens in real life. So what they try to present as seamless always kind of begins to fall apart at the seams, as it were. And that's what makes that comedy so fantastic. And you have this thing about ideals are always superseded by personal interests and personal ambitions. That's where the cracks appear. And that the Veep, I hadn't looked at it for a long time, and I began to look at it over the last day or two, and I just had forgotten how funny it is and how accurate it is. Looking at the innards, looking at behind the scene, looking at the type of things, that the mechanics that go on in politics, that the rusty clock that somehow makes the thing tick along very slowly and very inadequately.
There's a lot, as you were rewatching Veep, there's a lot of cruelness in it, isn't there? And meanness even of the characters, and they don't pull any of their punches. Would it ever leave you cynical, Harry, you know, that real life meets satire meets sobering documentary sometimes?
Yeah, well, there's a big variety of treatments of politics on both television and movies, and you go from kind of cinema verite to kind of ones that are very strictly autobiographical. And in the Irish context, you can think of the series on Haughey, for example, or even the Michael Collins film, to the kind of cinema verite like The Candidate and All the President's Men. And then you go into the kind of the satire, and Veep would very much be into the kind of satire. It's a bit like The Office. It's behind the scenes. It's almost like the camera is kind of sneaking up behind the shoulder of people as they speak. Not quite as much as as in The Office, for example. And you can see the influence of Iannucci in that, as you see in Malcolm Tucker. And his view, his worldview is quite cynical. And there is cynicism that comes right through. And the negativity of politics always outplays the positivity.
There's a great moment in Veep, isn't there, Harry, where she's signing her autobiography. And we see politicians all the time here and abroad do it. What is it?
Yeah, so she's signing her autobiography and her chief of staff is actually signing it for her. And she says to him, "You are pretending to be me signing a book that I didn't even write." And he replies, "That is politics in a nutshell." And that, for me, encapsulates the series. It's so true to life. Now, it's very cynical, but it is true to life.
Do you think it's true to Irish politicians that they have a lot
extent,
of ghostwriters?
Not so much as American politics. But one thing that I found out from having had a long career in politics is that you are surprised by nothing, ultimately. Things happen that are so strange and so unusual and so astounding that you can't even believe it. And it's happened in Irish politics, but it seems to happen in an even greater scale in the context of American politics. And it's happening now with the two candidates we've had for presidency, the Trump presidency, Joe Biden having to retire, yeah. Kamala Harris, the invisible vice president, appearing out of nowhere.
Always be prepared to be surprised as a political correspondent, which brings us to The West Wing, Brian. Mm. And this was an amazing political drama. I think many of us have gone back and watched it behind the scenes. Fictional president again and President Bartlet. Many people would say maybe the best president we never had. But it was famous, wasn't it, for its walks and talks as scenes.
Definitely, yeah. Like, I mean, it was written by Aaron Sorkin, who was, you know, one of the great screenwriters of the 21st century. Like, he wrote A Few Good Men, he wrote Social Network, he wrote Steve Jobs as well. I do think, though, that The West Wing has definitely dated, not in terms of sort of, it's almost kind of quaint when you look at it now in terms of like how kind of idealistic it is, how everyone's like is so smart and so witty, and how, you know, Republicans and Democrats have this sort of kind of genial rivalry. It's almost sort of chivalrous or whatever. But, you know, the truth of it is when you look at it now, for example, I mean, they're blood enemies. You know, that's sort of where you have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene screaming red in, you know, the House of Representatives and stuff like that. Like, it's completely, completely changed. And even the idea of a president like Jed Bartlet, who is this, you know, economist who is massively overqualified, is able to kind of quote Latin very, very readily and all the rest of it, that doesn't exist. It never existed.
But he still had to deal with, what, his daughter getting kidnapped, he gets shot, he gets impeached for failing to be upfront about his MS
diagnosis.
Censured, yeah. He relinquishes power, he has a tricky VP, endless military challenges. Like, it was a...
Oh, no, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, I think it was... There were certain writers, I think, who worked on the show that had actually spent time in The West Wing as well as speechwriters and stuff like that. So there definitely was a realism to it. But I just think in terms of the general tone and tenor of it, I think was quite unrealistic because it was so American idealism. It was so American exceptionalism and all the rest of it. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, this was done in the time of Bill Clinton when, you know, the Democrats were rampant and all the rest of it. You had Al Gore out there as well. And even with Monica Lewinsky and even with, you know, films like Wag the Dog that were around at the same time, West Wing was still triumphant because Americans, I think, believed and hoped that, you know, their presidents could be that smart and the people running the country were that smart, when it really wasn't the case. I mean, the great line I always think of from all the presidents then is when Deep Throat is in the underground car park with Bob Woodward, and he says, "Look, forget all the myths and medias you people have made about the White House. The truth of it is these people are not very bright and they're in over their head."
You mentioned there Bob Woodward, so maybe we go to that one, Harry, which was All the President's Men. Do you think it stands the test of time? Would you be showing it to students of journalism now? It's probably dated in that respect of
it's,
them going
it's
through
not dated.
Hard
no,
copies.
Not at no. all. 50 years old. It was made in 1975 and it'll be 50 years old next year, and it's still an outstanding piece of work. It's very long. I think it's 3 hours long or thereabouts. But every single moment of that film is compelling. It's an extraordinary retelling of one of the most extraordinary events in modern political history, and it's done in such an amazingly skillful way. You've two stellar performances from two actors who are at the top of their games, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman as Woodward and Bernstein, and then you have a cast of characters, all of whom are so well portrayed, so well defined. Everybody in the film comes across. Well, some of the films in politics, the more kind of cynical ones, some of the characters come across as kind of stereotypes or caricatures. Here, every single character is extraordinarily well defined. Like a lot of the films, we never see Nixon in the film in real life. He's only mentioned or seen on television or seen incidentally. So it's all about the uncovering of the conspiracy. And for me as a journalist, I mean, that film was an inspiration to a whole generation of journalists that came just immediately before me. I did a series on Hawaii a couple of years ago, and most of the journalists that emerged during the 1980s, they were inspired to go into journalism. Not so much by Watergate, but by the film about Watergate. That became a more powerful vehicle for inspiring a generation of people to follow their ideals. And yeah, it's such a beautiful... It's like The Candidate. Both of them are so... They're real. You feel that you're in the moment. You feel that you're in the huddle. You feel that kind of claustrophobic, that kind of silence. It gives the characters space to breathe. And both of them are extraordinary pieces of work.
Bringing you in there, Brian. Mm. Harry mentioned The Candidate starring Robert Redford. It's amazing, isn't it? There's that one line. Maybe we won't spoil it for people, but it's worth it for that one moment of realisation.
Yeah, and essentially what's going on in this is that Robert Redford's character is this trial lawyer who's convinced by the Democratic Party to stand for an election in California. It's an election that he's going to lose. His press agent is Peter Boyle. He tells him, basically, look, say whatever you want. It's totally fine. You're going to lose anyway, so you may as well go out there and be truthful. And sure enough, when he does that, the poll numbers basically crater. He's then convinced, look, maybe if you moderate your tone a little bit, moderate the message a little bit, become a little bit more generic, it won't be a complete washout. But then as he starts to do that, as he starts to sort of cede control of his message and what he believes to the political machine, he finds that he's becoming more and more popular. And then he kind of becomes interested in the power and the popularity as well. And it's really, I mean, it's one of those films, I think, that at the time was revolutionary in the idea of, like, you know, politics being cynical, the idea of politics being basically a popularity contest, for lack of a better word. And, you know, Robert Redford, again, he was, you know, very chiseled, very good looking and all the rest of it. He was the perfect candidate in that regard.
We didn't get to talk about In the Loop, so we recommend that to people at home. And The Diplomat on Netflix, the second season of that is coming out soon. My thanks to Harry McGee of The Irish Times and to our own Brian here in RTE for all of that. We'll be back after the ads.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.